This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin, and with me, Brian Fernandez and Kusu Chuang. And time to look at the top business stories that are moving markets and maybe moving some hearts as well. Now we come to the stories that are, in some sense, quite global. We begin with China. China is in the mix. Companies and countries have been urged to diversify their investment portfolios in preparation for the China bubble. So interestingly, this is a statement coming out of RHB Asset Management. The Chief Investment Officer of Fixed Income, Michael Chang, said that it's perfectly normal as there will be a bust in every cycle. So there's nothing to fear, he says.
So it is quite interesting because this is the first time, I think, in Malaysia, I've heard a senior banker say, hey, it's going to burst, but don't worry about it. Everything's going to be hunky-dory as long as you diversify your assets, whether you're a company or you're an individual. Now, in this panel discussion, they talked about the Belt and Road initiatives and how China is basically using that to export their overcapacity domestically. They talked about also, however, despite this cautionary tale, how China is still growing at an even clip of between 6.5% to 7%, and they expect that to continue.
You know, some weeks ago when we were talking about the 20th anniversary of the Asian financial crisis, I just want to cite an article by a guy called Barry Eichengreen, who wrote a column in the Project Syndicate
website. We've had him on the grill.
And he said that although the Asian tigers at the time, had reformed themselves, had built up the reserves, had built up their capital markets and financial structures, the one overriding concern where Asia's possibility of another Asian financial crisis occurring will emanate from China, because China, unlike Asia, which used to be fascinated and I think over-emphasized on growth, China still has that whole desire to fixate on GDP. And I think that, you know, Barry Eichengreen said that China is the one concern that we should all have in Asia in terms of the possibility of another financial crisis happening.
I mean, one thing was is China is so integrated in the world, partly through its own efforts. I think there's a general figure around now about the amount of money that's been spent by Chinese companies in sprees, the kind of shopping sprees around the world. $343 billion.
Yeah, so it's basically the shopping sprees that groups like Dalian Wanda have done, Ambang Insurance and Fosun International. So overall, the government, household and corporate debt clocks in at $28.8 trillion. That's a staggering
That's
number.
That's for China, right? That's for China. Their debt, okay.
Which is 258% of a GDP.
So that dynamic actually came about because China, as a country, wanted to wean the nation's dependence on manufacturing derived growth to more consumption driven growth, and I think it instructed its SOEs, state owned enterprises, to go around the world and buy these, you know, hospitality, retail, consumer type businesses. And if you look at that, Dalian bought Legendary Entertainment, Anbang bought the Waldorf Astoria, Fosun bought Club Med and Cirque Soleil. So, you know, these are all intended to cater perhaps to the overseas Chinese wallet, but it's come in a massive dent to the coffers. So I think in the last 1 or 2 years has dialed back a little bit, but nonetheless the concern exists for, you know, China's over-leverage.
You know, I would love to be a fly on the wall of Chinese policymakers. I would like to be in the room to think a Chinese fly
that can understand Mandarin.
Chinese fly that can... Yeah, absolutely. I could use a little translator machine. Yeah. If I can become a fly, I can have a little translator machine. And what I want to know is, what are their long-term plans? I mean, how far into the future are they planning this?
So, before we answer that question, the three of us are old enough to remember this. Think back to Japan and the bubble economy.
Correct.
You see exact parallels happening.
Yeah. And they went all around the world buying these hallmark assets and, you know, things to
everything from the
Rockefeller Center to Picasso's to Van Gogh's.
And they also had their kind of version of One Belt, One Road.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
So what happened?
And remember those days, everybody was learning Japanese, remember?
I was one of those people.
Yeah?
I learned Japanese at that time,
and
yes.
And today, guess what? People are learning Mandarin.
Exactly. I was just sharing that with our research team as well when we were doing research on this story. And one of the things that came up was, in fact, China is trying to learn lessons from that. In April 26, Communist Party leaders actually discussed the Japanese experience in a Politburo meeting. And if you think about that, shortly after, they started this whole clampdown on deleveraging. So it seems to be that they see the danger signs, they've learned some of the lessons from the past, and they're actually starting to execute that.
Okay, also in the mix of this morning, let's look at some of the challenges that the oil and gas industry continue to face. Malaysian Rating Corp ONG analyst Wan Mohamed Afiq Amiri said that while the worst of the oil crisis may be over, companies will continue to face cash flow problems. They're going to have to juggle between working capital requirements and debt repayment.
So this is a theme that's been ongoing for the last 2 years. Petronas CEO has come out and said basically that many companies need to consolidate in the industry because there just isn't that many contracts anymore. A lot of these companies are not financially healthy. They have assets that are underutilized. They have debt levels that needs to be serviced. Crude oil prices remain depressed. And overall, And we've seen some of these things happening in terms of the pains that are associated with the oil and gas companies, particularly in Singapore with the likes of the Swibers of this world and Perusai Petroleum debt and bond challenges also in Singapore.
Yeah, that's right. So, unlike the US in 2008 when the government stepped in to rescue these ailing banks, no such bailout exists in Malaysia for oil and gas service providers. And Petronas is right in saying, look, either shape up or ship out, because ain't nobody going to give you a lifeline here. So this whole issue of consolidation in the industry is, I think, necessary. And people like Nam Chiong, Alam Maritime, Perisai Petroleum, they're all recent oil and gas services companies hit by the downturn. I mean, Nam Chiong is nearly 2 billion ringgit in outstanding debt. Alam Maritime is submitting a proposed restructuring scheme. And, the whole thing is about the whole thing, I think it's a necessary reshuffle of the cards. But obviously, this comes at a great cost to, the oil and gas contributions to national coffers, to jobs as well.
Yeah, because they are contrarian views, aren't they?
Apropos our discussion on employee insurance schemes, because oil and gas engineers, they're skilled individuals, but they're coming out of a job.
Yeah, in fact, many of them are driving Ubers.
Yes, that's right.
But aren't there contrarian views about the low price of crude? Some are saying that, I believe Goldman Sachs come out with some sort of statement saying that companies are actually making lots of money at $50 a barrel, and they don't have to go to $100 a barrel to make money.
So you're right, Sharad. In fact, because according to Goldman Sachs recent report, oil majors such as BP and Shell are actually raking in more cash than they right now, when oil is at an average of $50, than they did in the heyday when oil was above $100. So how are they doing that? Well, basically they're doing that because efficiencies. They've obviously trimmed down the expenses. They've cut back on capital expenditure. And so that's generated enough cash flow and profits that's just trailed down to the bottom line.
Necessity, as they say, is the mother of invention.
Right, okay. Absolutely. Moving on very quickly, chemical company of Malaysia has become the latest Madaan Nasional Berhad's control group to be put under a restructuring plan. This will see it divesting its pharmaceutical business free of charge and raising funds totaling some 257 million ringgit.
So basically what it is CCM proposed a series of private placement and land disposal and a distribution of 73.37% equity interest in CCM Biotech to CCM shareholders. Now, what is this really? This is, again, CCM is another PNB company. It's part of Tan Sri Wahid, who yesterday, by the way, marked his first year as PNB chairman. Mm-hmm. And this is really part of the overall strategy that Tan Sri Wahid Omar has in terms of unlocking value of PNB's assets. So we talked about the demerger of Sime Darby, where Sime Darby was split into the plantation, Sime Darby itself, and the property unit. Then we've what they've also done in terms of PNB, UMW's demerger and splitting of the oil and gas unit, recapitalizing the oil and gas unit, and PNB has agreed to underwrite the entire new issue up to 1.8 billion. Then we also have PNB's acquisition of Silk Highway. So that was done in June for $380 million. And that is part of an overall plan to list Prolintas. And of course, not forgetting the SP Satya. So this is all a direction. Really good stuff coming out of PNB.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.